This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Welcome to Nutrition for Me on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. Today's show is brought to you in association with Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand. Visit reviveactive.com for all-in-one super formulas to boost energy, immunity, heart health, cognitive function, and even beauty. Well, this week, we're going to be talking about urinary tract health and overcoming urinary tract infections. Globally, there are more than 400 million urinary tract infections a year, and that number keeps rising. Men do get UTIs, but women get them much more often, and this is believed to be because their urethras are shorter and closer to the rectum, and that makes it easier for bacteria, usually E. coli, to enter into the urinary tract system. Maybe you're suffering from recurrent UTIs yourself and you're worried that you're prone to these types of painful and sometimes lengthy infections. But luckily, there's a lot that we can do to prevent them happening or alleviate them if we're suffering from a UTI. Well, this week, we're speaking to an amazing expert, Kate Waters. Kate Waters is a dedicated intimate health specialist, nutritional therapist, and soon to be qualified behavioral change coach, specializing in bladder, vaginal, and vulval conditions. Her clinic addresses the intricate connections between microbiome, sites, hormones, emotions, and overall well-being. Kate supports her clients to break patterns, to take control of their bodies so they'll feel physically empowered rather than dominated by their symptoms. She uses a holistic approach, often working alongside allopathic medicine. She uses food supplements and lifestyle advice to guide her clients and restoring balance throughout the body, creating a foundation for health and putting a management system in place so that they can enjoy life again. Kate also mentors other practitioners on their clients' intimate health conditions. She works worldwide, time zones allowing, but is based here in the UK. And you can find out much more about Kate Waters at katewaters.co.uk. You can also follow her on Facebook and Instagram, and also find out about the different things she's offering as a nutritional therapist, and also in terms of her cooking courses that she runs with Amanda Archibald in the USA of Genomic Kitchen. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today.
It's great to have you on the show. You're a well-known intimate health specialist, nutritional therapist. You were a chef in the past for 20 years. So you're really involved in the world of food and health and nutrition. We're going to be talking about UTIs today and the top tips for alleviating them, preventing them, and just providing more information to our audience. But before we go on to talk about that, tell us how you came to be an intimate health specialist, a nutritional therapist.
Thank you. Yes. So I was a chef, as you mentioned, and I was cooking as a private chef in various different homes at the time. And I realized that food had such a massive impact on people's health. I was working for a lady who had cancer and just trying to get her energy back up and talking to her about what she felt like her body needed that day. What did she need to be fed? Another lady, her husband was diabetic. So we were really limiting sugars in the diet and seeing what we could do to support his health through food. And then I found out I myself was celiac, and at this sort of light bulb moment went on about how food can really impact the body and how the information of food can really impact the body. So I studied nutritional therapy at the College of Naturopathic Medicine in London. And I qualified in 2014 from there. And I, you know, started off with gut health because that was my issue. But I always had this real draw towards women's health. And then I had my son and I thought about specializing in fertility. But then a colleague of mine who I'd studied with went and traveled abroad for, she was going away for a year. And she had fallen into supporting clients with bladder conditions through an acupuncturist that she had met and was sort of working alongside. And she handed me three of her clients and a talk for Bladder Health UK. And I loved it. It was just, I found my thing. And I think where I had talked to her a lot about what she was doing previously and gone over her cases with her, chewing the fat about what to do about them, I already had a good understanding of it. But then slowly more testing methods became available and I discovered other practitioners who were teaching about intimate health, one being Maura Bradfield in Australia. She has a business called Intimate Ecology and she trains practitioners. And I trained under her. And a real, again, another light bulb moment of the vaginal microbiome and then the bladder microbiome and what we can do with these and how we can alter them. And, you know, since about 2018, that is what I've been specializing in. And now that's all I see in my clinic is intimate health conditions.
It's a wonderful story. And it's obviously, you started off doing digestive health as many nutritionists do, but over
yes.
time you specialized in something much more targeted. And there is a big need for experts in this area because, as I said, there are so many cases of UTIs, mostly women, but also men. And the good thing is that there's a lot we can do to support ourselves to avoid developing a UTI, and if we have one, to shorten the duration and improve how our body is dealing with that infection. So let's go on to talk about UTIs and the major causes of UTIs, because I know that many of our listeners are suffering these days. What causes them?
So that's not an easy answer because it can be different in every person. But also, as we have new testing methods coming available to us, and I will talk about them later on, the data is changing. So let's go over some real basics. So the urinary system consists of two kidneys, which have a ureter each, a tube leading down to the bladder. And then the bladder has one tube, the urethra, that leads to the outside world. And we need to remember that the bladder is not sterile. And this was only discovered in around 2014. So it's really recent, the information and the understanding that we have of the bladder. And that information is changing almost on a daily basis in terms of what we're discovering and new research that's going into it. So a urinary tract infection is an infection of any part of that urinary system that I've just spoken about. And they're classed slightly differently. So urethritis is just an infection in the urethra, or where the symptoms in the urethra. Then we have a lower urinary tract infection, which tends to be more the bladder and the urethra. We have cystitis, which is just the bladder. We have the upper urinary tract infections, which are the kidneys and the ureters. And then we have kidney infections, polyneuritis. I can't say it. Anyway, a kidney infection. And then we also have recurrent and chronic UTIs where the symptoms just don't go away and they stay or they recur on a monthly or twice monthly basis. We have some other bladder issues as well that are a little bit of a grey area. So we have interstitial cystitis, where nothing is coming up on testing, but there are symptoms generally in the bladder area. And alongside that is painful bladder syndrome. And I say they're a grey area because when, as we now have this more precise method of testing, I think every single person who's come to me with interstitial cystitis, where we have gone on to do one of these more modern functional tests, we have found bacteria that could be classed as pathogenic in the bladder. Now, was that there right at the start? We can't say because they were just having culture-based testing at the time. But there's definitely an idea that interstitial cystitis is more a sort of a label like IBS. It's a sort of syndrome of there's lots of different things going on for you, but we can't actually put a finger on it. So we're going to give you this label of interstitial cystitis so that you have something to hold on to research, to focus on. So to answer your question, as in the causes of UTIs, pathogenic bacteria can translocate from the anus, so the gut microbiome, or from the vagina and travel to the urethra, causing an infection, and then or traveling up to the bladder and causing infection or up further, as I mentioned earlier, with the different types of UTIs that there can be. And with new testing methods, you know, where we're seeing that there is the full microbiome of the bladder, it can also potentially be that there is bacteria that should be in the bladder, but is overgrowing and causing an infection. But that's quite a new idea. And then there's non-bacterial UTIs. So we have sexually transmitted diseases like chlamydia, for instance, or mycoplasmas that cause symptoms like UTIs. Candida and ureaplasma can also cause UTI-like symptoms, and even some viral infections as well.
There seem to be a number of different causes and also a number of different types of UTIs, because normally the person on the street is just going to say UTI and think they just have a urinary infection, but really it seems to be quite specific. Now, how
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, it's good to delve into this, but how can we prevent these things developing?
So again, prevention is not easy, but we can certainly reduce our risk. And there's the real basics that everybody knows of wiping front to back, but things like wearing big pants, you know, a G-string is more likely to help move bacteria forward from the anus to the vagina or the urethra. Keeping period products organic, so less chemicals to the area that can therefore disrupt the microbiome, might cause irritation or inflammation, and that includes scented toilet paper. And it can be very, that one can be very difficult, particularly young girls going to school where they're given products and they don't have a say in what they're getting. But we can certainly sort of work on limiting that wherever possible. Washing your pants in a fragrance-free laundry wash, again, because of the irritation and inflammation that can occur with some of these fragrances and fake scents that are used and the chemicals in them. Not washing the vulva with soap when you're in the shower or the bath, and limiting bubble baths and bath oils unless they're particularly natural ones. And if you know you don't have an issue, then bubble baths and bath oils might be perfectly okay for you. But if you do have an issue, it's definitely something that you want to step back from. No douching. This is a really important one. So that's not washing the vagina out with a large amount of a fluid like water, for instance, because we disrupt the vaginal microbiome makeup. And that's, we really want to kind of make sure that that is as robust and as balanced as possible. No intimate sprays. So I have a little saying of if it sparkles, twinkles or smells, don't put it on your vulva or in your vagina. Complete pubic hair removal can lead to a higher risk of UTIs. So just trimming it if you need to, rather than complete removal. Sex is a big one. So we have a real movement of microbes and friction that happen. And our bodies are designed to tolerate sex. But if we are unbalanced, if our microbiome is unbalanced, or our immune system is unbalanced, or our muscles are clenched tight, sex may be a trigger for some people. And it is, I mean, for some people, it's a trigger for many people with UTIs. So peeing after sex is quite important, because if we think about, you know, the whole point of urination is, other than removing some toxins and fluids from the body, it's flushing bacteria out of the urinary system as well. So peeing will help to flush anything that might be moving towards the urethra out. Spermicides that are often used on condoms can increase the pH of the vagina, and that can disrupt our beneficial lactobacilli bacteria in the vaginal space. And so latex-free, spermicide-free condoms are go-to. And if you're using a lubrication, finding one that's pH balanced as well, just so that, again, we're not disrupting that delicate acidic space of the vagina. Balancing your microbiome. So again, going back to the vaginal space again, BV or Candida may lead to an increase in UTIs. And this is because the translocation of microbes that can happen. And also continued use of antibiotics will deplete the beneficial microbes, both in the gut, the vagina, but also the bladder as well, or anywhere within the body where we have microbiome sites. And you will need support with probiotics if you are taking continued use of antibiotics. Now, I am not saying in any way, shape or form that you shouldn't go and get antibiotics if you have UTI symptoms. It is incredibly important that we knock it on the head if possible and reduce it, stop it from traveling further up the urinary system to the kidneys, where it can cause scarring. But just being mindful about looking for other causative agents as well, and checking for things like STDs and all the things that I've just listed. Is there anything else that is happening that might be adding to this picture for you?
There are so many things that can be leading to a UTI. And I think for our listeners today, this is a wonderful list to consider and think about, because often one is suffering from the UTI. They might have thought it's just come out of the blue. Maybe they haven't had sex recently, but maybe they are washing with very highly scented soap, or are wearing G-strings, or not using the right period products, things that are irritating. So it's really important to consider this whole list. There's a lot to consider there. Now, how can, obviously, then my next question, I guess, links into the major causes of UTIs, but how can we prevent them happening? I think it's related, but is there anything that we need to think about? Should we think about urinating more, drinking more water?
So as I mentioned, you know, urination is about flushing out of the urinary system, along with obviously that removal of toxins and of fluids from the body. But in terms of urination, the sort of go-to is around about between 2 to 4 hours in how often we should be doing that. However, if you have a UTI, you are going to be feeling that urge to urinate much more often than between 2 to 4 hours. And that can actually, if you're going every 5 to 10 minutes, you can actually make yourself more uncomfortable I'm not saying hold on because if you have to go, you have to go. But if you can hold on a little bit longer, and especially if this is not just a UTI that's as a one-off, but is an ongoing situation, trying to do a little bit of bladder retraining can be really useful. And just trying to stretch that time out a little bit longer can be really helpful. For some, setting a timer for 2 hours or even an hour, if that's where you need to get to, can be useful, but definitely not holding on for any longer than 4 hours. And I have had some clients where they came to me with vaginal health problems, but their mother has UTI issues, and they were holding on for well over 4 hours because they were afraid of getting a UTI or of it hurting when they went to urinate. The longer the urine stays in the bladder, the more time the bacteria has to multiply because you are flushing it out as you go. So don't hold on if you have the urge to go, but try and at least get to an hour if you can with it. In terms of water, we should be drinking roughly between 1.5 to 2 litres a day. And that's a good average for most people. Our urine should be pale yellow or clear. Now, what I tend to find it with UTI clients is that actually they're drinking too much water. They've been to several doctors, they've seen several nurses, and all with good intentions have said, are you drinking enough water? Increase your water content, flush out the bacteria. And I've had some clients coming to me with almost as much as 4 litres of water going in a day, which, as you would expect, increases the frequency. Now, frequency is a symptom of a UTI and urgency, but if your bladder is full of water continuously, you are going to have frequency. So trying to reduce that down is a good idea, so that you're around about that sort of 2.5 liters a day. If you're over that, bringing it down very slowly and carefully might be a good idea to see if that reduces some of the frequency for you. Obviously, if you're sweating a lot or if you're exercising a lot, you may need to drink more water. And if you've got loose stools or diarrhea, you may need to drink more water. Herbal teas generally count in that amount of fluids going in, but something like a coffee can be an irritant for some people and for an irritant for the bladder or the gut. And it may be an idea to remove that just to see if that improves your symptoms. Carbonated drinks can also increase symptoms in some people. So fizzy drinks may contain bladder irritants like caffeine or artificial sweeteners or citric acid. And so cutting those out can be a good idea as well.
Why is more than 2.5 liters not good?
More is more just about the amount of fluid going in. So if there is a lot of frequency and a lot of urgency, it may be that you're putting too much pressure on the bladder with the amount of water going in. It's making it more alkaline. And some bacteria thrive in an alkaline environment. Our urine should be acidic. Now, some bacteria also thrive in an acidic environment, so it can be quite complicated from that point of view. But you may also be flushing out electrolytes as well. And electrolytes are minerals within the body that we get through our food and a little bit through our water as well. But the cells in the body that hold on to water, we need a certain mineral amount to get the water through the cell membrane into the cell. If the cells are not holding on to water, we may feel more thirsty, therefore we drink more, but we get into a vicious cycle where we're flushing out the electrolytes, but we're feeling more thirsty, so we're putting more water in.
Not actually hydrating the body.
Correct. Yes. And if you are drinking over 2 liters of water a day, I would suggest probably adding some electrolytes into your water, just a small amount, just to keep that balance up. So if you're at sort of 2.5 or more, think about adding in some electrolyte drops, which are easy to find in any health food store.
And why? And you also mentioned, Kate, that people need to retrain the bladder sometimes and hold on for longer. And that sounds a bit counterintuitive. Can you just explain why?
So if you are constantly going to the toilet, you are not allowing the bladder to have its normal stretch and de-stretching. I'm not sure that's the right terminology.
Or the shrinking. Contraction.
Yes, contraction. Thank you. The stretch and contraction that happens with the bladder. And it can start almost spasming. And we want to allow the bladder to fill up and to have its normal function. And it can actually cause more discomfort and more pain to be constantly urinating. Also, if there is that urethral discomfort when you're urinating, the constant flush of fluid running over that will cause more discomfort as well. So we just want to try, you know, if it's your first UTI, this may not be prevalent to you. This is for people where they have ongoing, current, chronic or recurrent UTIs, where they're constantly in a state of needing to run to the toilet all the time. Sometimes bladder retraining can be a useful tool. So I've had some people come to me where for the past 2 to 3 years, they are constantly going to the loo, either because they feel they need to or because they're worried they may not find one. And they're actually pushing their bladder to stop sensing when it's full at the right time. So it starts to tell you that it needs to urinate even when there's only a tiny amount of urine in there.
It's a minefield. There's so much information that you're giving our listeners today, which is so useful, things that I didn't know as well. So thank you so much. Now, we're going to be talking a lot more about UTIs, how we can prevent them, what we can do to support ourselves as well if we have UTIs, after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Nutrition for Me on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. I'm speaking with Kate Waters, intimate health specialist, nutritional therapist as well. And you can find out more about her on her website, katewaters.co.uk. Also follow her on Facebook and Instagram. And we're talking about intimate health, UTIs, what you should do if you get one, how can you avoid getting one, how can nutrition, herbs and supplements help us in our UTI journeys. Now, Kate, we were talking about the bladder, retraining the bladder, how much water we should be drinking, how often we should be going to urinate, etc. And the things that can be causing our UTIs, as well as how to lifestyle factors that we can change to improve our prognosis. But what about constipation? Because I've heard that a lot of people with constipation can often get a UTI. Is that right?
Absolutely. I would say at least 80% of my UTI clients or bladder clients have had constipation, either when they come to me or a history of it in their life previously. So if we think about what's happening functionally with constipation, the stool is being held in the bowel for longer. So we have pressure, you know, everything's very close together in there, the colon next to the vagina, next to the bladder. So we have pressure on the vagina and the bladder walls. There may be pressure or damage to the pelvic floor from straining when trying to pass a stool. The bacteria is spending longer closer to the anus, therefore it has less far to travel potentially as well. And we can think about gut microbiome imbalances. Although the gut microbiome is very different to the vagina, the gut has a much higher diversity than the vagina or the bladder, there are still some similarities, and some of the bacteria, the pathogenic bacteria that we may see causing a UTI, Enterococcus basalis, Klebsiella, things like that, may be traveling from the gut, well, quite often are traveling from the gut to the vagina and then on to the bladder. The bladder and vagina are slightly more similar in their makeup, but still different. But we find that lactobacilli, the beneficial bacteria that we see in the vaginal space, where we want low diversity and a dominance of that lactobacilli, we're seeing that to be quite similar in the bladder in terms of we think that lactobacilli beneficial in terms of keeping the balance.
It's so important to consider, because a lot of the people with constipation today who also have UTIs are not making that connection, are they?
No, absolutely. And getting your bowels moving is really important.
How can we get our bowels moving? Most people say we just have to have fiber, but you know, can we delve into that a bit more and give people an idea of what they can do for themselves through their nutrition and their lifestyle?
Sure. There's a lovely traditional Chinese medicine saying, is there enough water to float the boat or enough wind to fill the sails? So the water is obvious, but the wind being fiber. But we need to think about fiber, yes, from vegetables and beans and pulses, but maybe also from fruit as well. I think there's quite a bit of research into fruit fiber being really beneficial to get the bowels moving. And then you've got all those wonderful colours coming with fruit as well, full of antioxidants to help support your immune system. I find that flax seeds and prunes mixed together to make a blended together to make a mousse, really useful for getting bowels moving. And about 2 tablespoons of that daily can really help to, the prunes have something called sorbitolin, which draws water into the bowel, and the flax seeds help to bulk up the stool and to move it through. Stewed apple is another one. I always try and get people to grate the skin as well as the apple flesh, because you've got soluble fiber being the flesh and insoluble fiber being the skin. So stewing that up with a little bit of cinnamon, maybe some raisins if you want to make it a little bit sweeter, or putting those prunes into your stewed apple as well and then breaking them down into little bits, mushing them in once it's cooked, can be a great addition. Kiwi fruit with the skin on can be useful as well. And then things like figs and chia seeds. And as I mentioned, your beans and pulses as well are super important. But making sure you do have enough water going in, if there is too little water. Again, electrolytes are important. So there's many components that you can look at with nutrition, but also movement. Are you stagnant? Are you just sitting still all day? Do you need to put some music on and sway your hips and dance around the kitchen? Lifting your knees up. There's something called a squatty potty, which I think is a rather lovely idea, but just a little step in front of the toilet so you can raise your knees up. You know, we're not designed to sit on a bowl to pass a stool. We should be squatting down to the ground, and that helps to put everything in the right line for the stool to move out easily.
This is so useful because some people are bearing down and straining, which isn't good. It puts pressure, you know, can cause prolapse, put pressure on the pelvic floor. So to have that little stool in the toilet, which a lot of people don't know about, is tremendously useful for doing a number two.
Absolutely.
I'm so glad you're sharing this information. Now, what about hormone levels? Maybe our listeners are not making that connection today, but can hormone levels predispose us to UTIs?
Absolutely. So if we go back, you know, I've mentioned lactobacilli quite a lot through this talk because they are our beneficial microbe in the vaginal space, and we are seeing that in the bladder as well. And they have a very strong relationship to estrogen. So estrogen creates something called glycogen, which is secreted by the vaginal walls, and that feeds our beneficial lactobacilli. So for some people, they may find that their UTIs are worse around menstruation when those lactobacilli levels are lower, or during puberty where our hormones are fluctuating up and down. And that's the same in perimenopause, where we may see estrogen rising and falling quite a lot before it drops off to a lower level in menopause. And we see an increased risk as women age into menopause and older. There is a much higher increased risk for UTIs of women around the age of sort of 65. And part of that is to do with the low levels of estrogen in the body, which is the loss of lactobacilli, but also the change in structure as well. So atrophy of the tissue and of the muscles around the vagina and bladder, a loss of plumpness in the bladder lining, in the vaginal lining, structure of the bladder. So urine may pool in the bladder if there is a prolapse and the bladder is not completely emptying. If we're not getting that flush of urine out of the bladder, there will always be a small amount of urine left in the bladder. It's almost impossible to empty it completely, which is why people can go back to the toilet having just urinated and be able to squeeze a small amount more out. But we don't want a large pool of urine it left in the bladder, because then the bacteria can start to multiply, and that in itself can cause UTIs. So when you're cycling still, some people may notice these UTIs more around menstruation because the lactobacilli has dropped off, and other microbes that are probably quite normal for being in the bladder, Gardnerella, for instance, or something like Prevotella, may rise up and grow a little bit more around that menstruation time and may therefore translocate to the urethra and to the bladder and stir up trouble in the bladder. There's a hypothesis called covert pathogenesis of something like Gardnerella translocating to the urethra, to the bladder, coming in, causing an immune reaction, leaving E. coli that is naturally residing in the bladder wall coming out and saying, woohoo, it's an opportune moment for me to come out now. And that's the one that gets caught and gets the blame. Whereas actually looking at the vaginal microbiome can be really useful in seeing, is there an imbalance there? Because that may possibly be causing a balance in the bladder microbiome as well.
Okay, earlier in our interview, you talked about the tremendous advances in culture-based testing and how that's really showing us a lot more about what's going on. Can you explain what that is for our listeners? And also let us know why, with this testing, it doesn't always show an infection, and what kind of testing people should be having in order to understand the nature of their infection and what they can do about it.
Okay, so the culture-based testing is always the first port of call. Go to your doctor, do a sample, get the antibiotic. But this test was developed in the 1950s, and it's quite outdated now. Around 50% of those with UTI symptoms show nothing on culture testing. I think that statistic comes from the USA, but we can extrapolate it to the UK as well. It's the same testing method happening. If the urine is too diluted, it's going to yield low colony counts. There's just not going to be enough bacteria to grow in that petri dish. The bacteria needs to be alive when it arrives at the lab. So if you think about when you do a urine test, you pee in a pot, You might leave it on the window ledge for half an hour before you drive to the doctor's surgery. It then sits, I mean, I know my surgery definitely has a box by the door that you put it in, and that box leaves, I think, at 12 o'clock to go to the lab. So those urine samples can be sitting there from whenever you brought it to 12 o'clock when the guy comes, straps it into his motorbike, little refrigerated little carrier, takes it to the lab. Hopefully they put it straight into a refrigerator once it gets there to be tested. But, you know, there's a lot of times where it's out of the refrigerator. Has it survived that journey? Also, not all pathogens will grow on a standard culture plate. So originally, it's been thought that around 80% of UTIs are caused by E. coli, but this is because it grows really easily and really quickly in a culture base. So it also grows sort of 24 hours, which is the standard time that most cultures are left for. But other bacteria may need longer to grow, or they may just not grow in a culture base very easily. When we see mixed growth on a culture, it's often discarded, so if there's more than one bacteria. And this goes back to this idea that the bladder is sterile, and we now know that it's not. And we need to think that mixed growth means that there may be several type of bacteria causing the problem for the person with the symptoms. We may also see that the bacteria, well, we won't see it, but the bacteria can biofilm onto the bladder wall, so it can create a sort of protective coating around itself and its buddies. And therefore, it's not free floating in the urine. And if it's not free floating, it's not going to come out and it's not going to be able to be cultured. As I say, it's still really important to go and get a culture done. It is the first port of call, but we do have other testing methods out there now. So the doctor will also do things like dipsticks and test strips, and those are things that you can do at home. And they are useful, but there is a lot of false positives and false negatives with them. So don't rely on them. There is microscopy, where a urologist, for instance, will take a urine sample from you directly in the clinic room and analyze the urine under a microscope, looking for bacteria, fungi, epithelial cells, which is the bladder lining, and white blood cells and red blood cells. This was developed back in the 1920s, but it is used quite widely by urologists today. And then there is broth culture, which is still culturing, but grown in this special broth, and the bacteria is left for a little bit longer, and they do pull up more bacteria in that method. But we now have some more up-to-date tests, and these are generally all private tests. They're functional tests. They're not ones, for instance, that the NHS is using, so people have to pay for them, which can be quite expensive. I think in the USA, you can definitely get some of these tests via your insurance. One of the methods of testing is PCR. And PCR is very sensitive. It's a very specific method, and it detects DNA sequences of bacteria present in the sample, but it only looks for bacteria selected. So you might say, I want to look for E. coli, Enterococcus faecalis, Klebsiella, Lactobacilli, but you're missing out on other ones. It wouldn't just be four, by the way. It's always more than that, but it's not looking at everything. Then we have next generation sequencing, and there are various different types of next generation sequencing, but they all look at 100% of the microbiome. So it's much more comprehensive, and it shows the load of the bacteria. So we'd say, for instance, using the same bacteria, we might see 40% E. coli, 30% Enterococcus faecalis, and the rest Lactobacilli. That would be a very unwell bladder, I think, if we were seeing that. But it gives us an idea of the amount of the different bacteria and what's taking up the most space. Some of these next generation sequencing methods use different fungi testing methods. So depending on which test you're going for, it's not always the same method to look for fungi. Some of them measure abundance of fungi as well, which is really useful if we can see that the fungi is really overgrown. But also, we're not just looking for candida in that respect. We're looking at other fungi, and particularly if somebody's been on a lot of antibiotics or a lot of antifungals, we may find that the usual fungi, candida, for instance, has been knocked out, but something else, a little bit more unusual, has grown in its place and may be causing problems.
Now, we're going to be talking a lot more about urinary tract health and what we need to know to protect ourselves and to overcome urinary tract infections and prevent them after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio on the Nutrition for Me show. I'm speaking with Kate Waters, intimate health specialist, nutritional therapist, working with people in terms of their bladder health, their vaginal health, their vulval health. So definitely reach out to her if you're suffering. Her website is katewaters.co.uk. And you can follow her on Facebook and also on Instagram. Kate, we were talking about the testing methods. Obviously, you offer those to your clients and on a private basis and can advise on the best ones. But let's go on to talk about your speciality as a nutritional therapist. People come to you because they're suffering vaginal health problems, urinary tract issues, etc. How does nutrition play a role in this? And how can we use our diet to help ourselves if we're suffering from a urinary tract infection?
So good nutrition is the foundation of everything. It's the building blocks. We need that foundation to be well for everything in life. Without that, we will be lacking in certain areas. So food is information to the body, and getting the right information in is really important. We want to be supporting the nervous system and the immune system. We need, you know, the body to be able to repair itself with protein. We need the right fibers to feed beneficial bacteria and make things like short chain fatty acids for colonic energy. Talking about the gut, I didn't actually mention loose stools earlier when we were talking about constipation, because there is an issue with if your stools are very loose and you're splattering into the toilet, it's another way that those microbes might be translocating. So just to mention that as well, whether it's loose or constipation, we want to normalize that bowel movement. So supplements are really important because we're looking at specific nutrients. We want to bring back balance, and sometimes food isn't just quite enough to do that. So we're looking at sort of specific targets to help shift the body to a pattern where we want to see things working better. We want to turn up or down the volume button on certain pathways. Probiotics can be used to shift the bladder, vaginal or gut microbiome, again, to bring back balance. And sometimes it's less about killing off pathogenic bacteria and more about bringing back the good stuff to take up the space to be working as it should be. So although, yes, I do use probiotics and herbs and supplements to bring down levels of things, what I'm really wanting to do is to bring back balance to the body rather than just killing things off. Herbs have a multifaceted use. So certain herbs like antimicrobials, for instance, will also modulate the immune system, calm the nervous system, or tonify or bring back balance to systems like the urinary tract. So I use a combination, all of these. And all of this should be aimed at the individual. And this is where it's really important to be working with a practitioner like myself or somebody else who really understands what you need. The basic, you know, there are some basics for the bladder that you can try at home. So probiotics, absolutely get using some that are aimed at the vagina or the bladder. I find quite often for this to work, it needs to be quite specific for the individual and what their microbiome needs. But there are lots out there that you can try. D-mannose is a useful one as it stops the certain bacteria adhering to the bladder wall. E. coli, Klebsiella, and Enterococcus pisolis are ones that it can be supportive on, but mostly it's the E. coli that it seems to work well on. And not for everybody, I have to say. Garlic, raw in food or as a tea, which sounds disgusting, but actually isn't that bad. You know, putting a garlic clove into a cup with some boiling water and consuming that water can be really useful. Teas like corn silk or marshmallow will be demulcents. They coat the lining of the bladder. And for the majority of people, that can be quite soothing. Not for everybody. And that's the caveat around all of this. There's never a one size fits all. But parsley leaves, if you put 10 flat leaves of parsley into a cup and pour some water on, this will relieve bloating in the gut and potentially the bladder as well. And nettle tea has a great affinity with the kidneys. It works as a diuretic and can help to flush things through a little bit. Vitamin C can be useful to acidify the urine, and that depends on the bacteria, as I mentioned earlier, but it also works as an antioxidant in the body and can mop up some of that oxidative damage that may be happening from an infection or the stress that comes with a urinary tract infection. Cruciferous vegetables contain something called sulforaphane, which can help to lower inflammation. Really useful. We should all be consuming lots of them, but some of us with bad gut health may not tolerate them. And making sure we've got good levels of vitamin D is really important. And that's really important for our immune system, because our immune system really plays an important part in how we are getting over UTIs or how we're fighting them off. So making sure our immune system is robust, and we need that, as I said earlier, for the whole body to be well. But for any infection anywhere, the immune system is the first thing that launches a response. The bladder cells will respond promptly to a pathogenic growth, and the immune system comes in and fights it off. So diet first is always really important. And a limited diet, limited foods means limited information to the immune system. And I spend quite a lot of my time actually getting people to bring foods back in rather than cutting more foods out. So making sure we're eating a wide range of color of those vegetables and fruits, good quality protein, as I mentioned, the cruciferous vegetables, consuming omega-3 fatty acids. So if we think about if you consume fish, salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardines, and herring all contain good levels of omega-3 fatty acids, chia seeds, flax seeds, and walnuts as well. Good hydration, as we've talked about earlier. Getting good quality sleep is really important because the body repairs itself whilst you're asleep. Exercise, if you're not in too much pain and you're able to exercise, so exercise that's right for your body. I was reading something very interesting the other day where they were saying if your exercise leaves you exhausted, it may not be the right one for you. You want to do an exercise where once you've finished, you think, oh gosh, I could do some more. That's the one that's right for your body. Stress reducing exercise is really important because stress is massive in this world. Urinary tract infections, vaginal health infections, anything in the intimate area causes so much stress and so much shame for people. And quite often when the testing is not picking up the bacteria that's present and they're being told that there isn't anything wrong with them, the amount of clients I've had who've been told that it's all in their head when actually there is an infection going on. So working on things like breath work or mindful walking or being creative, drawing, carving, anything like that, dancing, all of these things can help to reduce our stress level just a little bit and put us back into the calm part of our nervous system. And all of these things are really important. And this is where I work from a nutrition point of view, is wrapping all of this up and then also working with behavioral change as well and helping people to shift their patterns to get them to a better state.
You briefly mentioned the immune system. How does our immunity play a part in urinary tract infections and how can we support our immunity? I know you mentioned vitamin D and a good diet, but is there anything more that we need to think about?
Yeah, so the things I've just mentioned, really, I think the immune system is first on site. And it launches a response. The bladder cells are responding to pathogenic growths. And then the immune system comes in and starts working on that infection. But it's all about the diet. As I mentioned, the color, the protein, cruciferous vegetables, vitamin D, omega-3 fatty acids, hydration, sleep, stress is a massive, huge interplay in this one. So it's sort of a big bundle of all of those things. There are lots of nutrients as well that can be supportive in the immune system, but that's very much dependent on the individual and what their body needs.
It's been great talking to you this week. Kate Waters is an intimate health specialist. She's a nutritional therapist. And you can find out more about her on her website, katewaters.co.uk. Also follow her on Instagram and Facebook and reach out to her if you have a UTI or a vaginal condition. And she is the expert in this area. And there are also some PDFs to download from her website. You've got the menopausal vagina. I'm very interested in that one. Awesome. So intimate health tips. You'll have to come back on the show to talk about the menopausal vagina. There'll be many women that want to know more. For listeners today, I really hope you've enjoyed listening to the show as much as I've enjoyed presenting it. Today's show is brought to you in association with Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand. Visit reviveactive.com for all-in-one super formulas to boost energy, immunity, heart health, cognitive function, and even beauty. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.